Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, brothers and sisters. It's Roshan Muhammad Salih here, the editor of Five Pillars. And today I'm going to try something a little bit different. Usually we're very focused here on Five Pillars on the news agenda, but today we're going to talk a little bit about Islamic history and specifically about something which is really interests me, and that is Islamic Spain or Al-Andalus. A place that I've been to many, many times, and I was only there, you know, a month and a half ago. I encourage all Muslims to go there because it's really a golden age, one of the golden ages in Islamic history. And learning about Islamic history in general, I feel really boosts our iman, boosts our kind of belief in Allah, our belief in Islam, and gives us a desire to recreate the glories of the past. So in 1492, the last kingdom of Muslim Spain, Granada, fell to the Catholic monarchs Isabel and Ferdinand. And that book ended basically 800 years of glorious Islamic history in the Iberian Peninsula, both Spain and Portugal. Now, earlier on, I had a 20-minute chat with an expert on this topic, a guy called Asim, a brother, I should say, called Asim Akil, who's known as the Tariq Trekker, Tariq as in the Arabic word for history. And Asim has done a series on Muslim Spain, as well as Central Asia, and also the history of the Ottomans. So, inshallah, I hope what he had to say will be beneficial. Assalamu alaikum, Asim Akil, joining us from Blackburn today. So Asim is known as the Tariq Trekker because of his historical videos that he puts on YouTube. Asim, you haven't appeared on Five Pillars before, so could you introduce yourself to the audience a little bit, please?
Wa alaikum salam, Roshan. My name is Asim, but I'm known to more people as the Tariq Trekker, an Islamic history YouTuber, travel around the Muslim world, narrating Islamic history from the places where it took place, and hopefully educating myself and others on this vital topic.
And you've done a series on Muslim Spain, but also on the Ottomans as well, right?
Currently, I'm releasing a series on the Ottomans. Just released an episode about Muhammad al-Fatih. Before that, I did a series on Spain, Al-Andalus, and one on Central Asia as well.
Where did this interest in Islamic history come from, Akil? Have you studied it, or is it a hobby, or what?
It started off while I was at uni. Having grown up in England, we were not taught much Islamic history. And I watched a documentary series called Empire of Faith. And I couldn't believe what I was hearing about Islam and Muslims from the past. So ever since then, I've been pretty much infatuated. And then started the reading, the research, and eventually the YouTube channel.
Okay, let's kick this off, because we're talking about Muslim Spain today, because January is kind of the catastrophic event, the fall of Granada, the last Muslim kingdom in Al-Andalus. I think it fell at the beginning of January 1492. Now, obviously, when we think of, when we think of Al-Andalus, we think of this Islamic golden age, one of the golden ages of our history. Why was Islamic Spain so great, and what contribution did it make to Islamic civilization and world civilization?
I think if you ask this question to many people, they'll say things like convivencia or enlightenment in the Dark Ages. But I would say something different, which might shock many people in Europe today. I would say in the 10th century, 80% of Spain and Portugal, what is now today Spain and Portugal, were practicing the Islamic faith. That equates to about 5 million Muslims. And the vast majority of those were converts to Islam, not Arabic origin or Berber origin. They were converts. So Western European ethnicities. At the same time, in the 10th century, Al-Andalus was actually a caliphate, and the caliph, the man who ruled this caliphate, was someone who had 75% European blood. So it was a Western European empire whose subject population was mainly Western Europeans and run by a man who would look like your typical Englishman on the streets of an English town today. Mm-hmm. That shows to me the universality of Islam, and I think would be particularly useful to bring to light in today's age, where there's notions and narratives in Europe today that Islam and Muslim are aliens to the continent.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, you mentioned the word convivencia earlier on. Explain what that is exactly, Asim.
So convivencia means basically living together. And where in Al-Andalus, the three main religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, all live together in peace for huge portions of the Muslim experience there. This was something that happened all the time in the rest of the Muslim world. But when the Muslims finally got to Al-Andalus, they just carried on their same policies. So it was the first time it happened in Christendom, or an area where, which was formerly Christendom. And to give you an example, the Jewish people before the arrival of the Muslims were a persecuted people. But Jewish people today call their experience in Al-Andalus, Muslim-controlled Spain, the golden age of Jews in Europe. And in terms of Muslim-Christian relations, there's one fact which can highlight certain, the good relations that they had, and that is that the Christians were called or known as Moz Arabs. And Moz Arab is a word which comes from the Arabic word called Musta'arab, and it basically means Arabized. So these Christians who were living under Muslim rule, they remained Christian, and they adopted Arabic language, Arabic dress, and other Muslim traditions. Now, you don't adopt and you don't look up to people who you despise, and you don't mimic people who you despise, people who you don't like. So that's a sign that there was some very good relations between the two. To give you an example, would you imagine that Tommy Robinson would dress in a thobe and go and take Urdu and Arabic lessons so he could mix with the local Muslim population in Luton? I don't think so. These are examples of the three religions living together in harmony for large parts of the Muslim experience in Iberia.
Asim, when I read about Al-Andalus, everyone talks about the Cordoba Caliphate as being like the zenith of culture and sophistication, of the 800-year Muslim rule of the Iberian Peninsula. Can you paint a picture of what was Cordoba like in the, maybe it was the 11th or the 10th or 11th centuries when it was at its height?
So Cordoba had hundreds of mosques, hundreds of bathhouses, paved streets, hundreds of libraries. The library of Al-Hakam II, who's the second caliph of the Cordoba Caliphate, had reportedly about 500,000 books, 500,000 books, which was more than the rest of Europe combined at the time. It was such a coveted place that many Europeans would travel to Al-Andalus, to Cordoba, to learn what the Muslims had and go back to Europe. And a classic example is a pope. He was called Gerbach d'Aureliac. He was of French origin, but he traveled from the Frankish lands to Cordoba. He learned Arabic, and he even went to study in Fez, I think, as well. And eventually came back to France, became the pope, and he was a big advocate of the Europeans changing their numbering system from the Roman numerals, which you couldn't do complex maths with, to the Arabic numerals we have today, 1, 2, 3, 4, the numerals we have today.
And this was a time when the rest of Europe was in the Dark Ages, right?
Yes, the Dark Ages correspond roughly to the fall of the Roman Empire, 476 AD, up until the fall of Constantinople in 1453 AD.
Okay.
But the term Dark Ages is a bit loaded, because it's very Eurocentric. It only considers what was happening in Europe at the time. It doesn't look at what was going on in the rest of the world. So if you went to Central Asia, Persia, Middle East, the Muslim lands, you wouldn't say they were Dark Ages at all. You would say that they were very enlightened. But yes, certainly the rest of Europe was very much behind the Muslim world, except for one part of Europe, in Western Europe, Islamic Western Europe, and that was Al-Andalus.
Yeah. Asim, what would you say to, you know, the detractors when we talk about Al-Andalus and the glories of Al-Andalus, They say, no, the Arabs, the Muslims, they were invaders. They invaded and occupied Spain. What would you say to them?
I would say that sometimes some questions are loaded, and they also carry an agenda behind them. So firstly, I would address certain words in that question, and then I would question the consistency of the questioner. So for example, you said Arabs invaded and occupied Spain. The first word, Arabs, actually, the people who came across in 711 AD were mainly Berber.
Berbers.
There were 7,000 Berber troops led by Tariq ibn Ziyad, who was Berber himself. And later on, they were reinforced with 5,000 Arab troops. Secondly, the question included the Arabs invaded and occupied Spain. Well, there was no Spain at that point in time. Spain is a modern construct which only came into existence in the early 1500s. So what people do is they kind of back project their reality now into the past and say, you took what we had and now we've got it back. And thirdly, the word invasion, there is a lot of dispute regarding how this actually took place. Some people say the Muslims were even invited in by a Christian man called Count Julian. It's a bit disputed, but for argument's sake, let's just say it was an invasion. Then I would start to question the consistency of the question. I'll say, okay, do you consider the Romans who came from modern day Italy to the Iberian Peninsula as invaders and occupiers because they conquered the area and they brought a new religion, Trinitarian Christianity? Do you consider the Visigoths who came from Northern Europe into the Iberian Peninsula as invaders and occupiers because they came with a new religion, Arian, non-Trinitarian Christianity? Or is this just reserved for the Arabs who just happened to have slightly browner skin and came with the Muslim faith? And if there was an inconsistency, then that might indicate some subconscious Islamophobia or underlying bias.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was law of the jungle back then, wasn't it? I mean, it was, there weren't any fixed borders in those days, and it was invade or be invaded. That was the rule of law at that point. What about us, and what about bad bits? Because obviously we look at Al-Andalus and we glorify it from an Islamic perspective, as we should. Were there any bad bits in that 800 years?
Yeah, of course. Where there's humans, there's good, and where there's humans, there's bad, and Muslims are no different. If I was to pick one particular bad point, it would be during the Umayyad period between 711 and 1031, where people from Christian backgrounds would convert into Islam, and they would be known as Muwallad Muslims, as opposed to Berber Muslims and Arab Muslims. And one thing the Umayyads did was these Muwallad Muslims, they kept on charging them the jizya tax. Because the Umayyads did not want to lose this huge revenue stream. Because at the beginning, the Muslims were a small ruling minority, so they were getting a lot of money. But so because they were treated differently, they started to feel different, and it created a weakness and a rift within the society, which would rear its head on many occasions. And eventually, it would help in the fragmentation of Al-Andalus in 1031, the Cordoba Caliphate, into many different taifas. And from that point in time, Al-Andalus was a lot weaker than what it was before. They did well to hang on for another 400 or 500 years. But you can see something similar happening, unfortunately, in the Muslim community today where we live in Britain, because you'll have a Bangladeshi mosque frequented by mainly Bangladeshis and a Somali mosque frequented by Somalis, a Pakistani mosque, an Arab mosque, and people are not praying together. So you can see similar things happening. And this is a crack which someone with dodgy intentions could come and exploit. And it might be a Muslim and it might be a non-Muslim.
Is that why Andalus eventually fell, because of the division between the Muslims?
I think, well, in 1031, when the Cordoba Caliphate collapsed, the power balance completely changed. Before, the power balance was strongly in the hands of the Muslims. And then after that, it was more 50-50. But then over the centuries, slowly, the power balance became more in favor of the Catholic states in the north.
Okay. All right. What about what happened afterwards? So obviously the Reconquista, you know, happened over several hundred years, then the eventual kind of Catholic retaking of Muslim Spain. And it culminated in 1492 when Granada fell, the last kingdom. What happened afterwards, Arsene?
Just to make one little point first, you used the term Reconquista. Over the years, this Reconquista terminology has been used, but these days it's actually a highly disputed term.
Okay.
And people are actually challenging this narrative from many points. But to answer your question, in 1492, Muhammad XII, Abu Abdullah, known as Boabdil in Spanish, signs the Treaty of Granada with Ferdinand and Isabella and transfers the city to the Catholic monarchs. And straight away, the Catholic monarchs expel the Jews from Spain straight away. The reason why they didn't expel the Muslims was because in the Treaty of Granada, Muhammad XII had negotiated that the Muslims would stay loyal subjects of Ferdinand and Isabella, providing they were and therefore in response they could be Muslims, practice Islam, keep their money and keep their possessions. Within 10 years of this happening, the Muslims felt they were being harassed by the authorities, and so they rebelled. And the Catholic monarchs, Ferdinand and Isabella, put down this rebellion. But they then said that the actions of the Muslims broke the Treaty of Granada because they weren't loyal subjects.
Mm.
So therefore, they said the treaty is null and void. We do not have to uphold any religious tolerance now. So they then set a decree saying that all Muslims had to convert to Catholicism. And this was done en masse. And in reality, when something is done en masse and by force, people don't really believe in the new religion that they've converted to. So the Moriscos, or Little Moors as they were now known, would practice Christianity openly in front of other people and the authorities, and then they would practice Islam in private. Sometimes they'd be forced to eat pork, to drink alcohol, and if anyone was caught doing anything Islamic, maybe wudu or prayer, then they could be killed on the spot. And over the decades in the 1500s, the enforcement of these rules got more severe and more severe and more severe until the 1560s or the 1570s, and the Muslims decided, you know what, we've had enough of this. So they decided to declare the Islam openly, and they were going to fight. So a rebellion took place in the what's known as the Al Pujara Mountains, in the south of Spain, which comes from the Arabic Al-Bashara. And the Spanish authorities had to put down this rebellion quite severely. But after they did, they decided that all Morisco Muslims now had to be expelled from Spain. So by 1613, all the Muslims had made their way to the south coast. And on the way, some of them were harassed by Catholic citizens. Not all Catholics did this, but some Catholic citizens did this. And they were robbed. And so by the time they got to the coast, they either had very little money or no money. So many of them couldn't afford to pay the ship journey to get all their family across to North Africa. So they were left with a difficult decision. Does an adult stay behind, and therefore a Morisco adult is staying back in Spain and therefore would be killed? Or do you leave your child behind, who won't be killed because they're a minor, but then they would be raised in Catholic families as Catholics, and you go, and everyone survives. And most people chose that both people should survive, and the children stayed. So children were separated from their parents. Other Moriscos were transported across the Straits of Gibraltar halfway by Spanish sailors, and some of the Spanish sailors threw the Moriscos into the water and returned back to Spain with their belongings. As for the rest of the Moriscos, they managed to make it to North Africa.
Incredibly brutal stuff. Has modern day Spain, I mean, what is the Muslim presence in Spain now like? And has modern day Spain come to terms with its Islamic past or not?
I think mainly now the Muslims in Spain are economic migrants from Morocco or Algeria and places like this. When I filmed this series on Andalus and I traveled to Spain, I went to Madrid, I went to Gibraltar, Cordoba, Seville, and Granada. And I was pleasantly surprised by what I saw, because there is an acknowledgement, especially in the south, of the contributions of the Muslims and Al-Andalus. There's some places, I think, where they don't want to acknowledge it. And I think there'll probably be a rift. If you're more to the left, you're more likely to acknowledge it and think it was good. If you're more to the right and a nationalist, you'd probably hate it. Maybe there's a difference between older and younger people as well. But just as an example, when I was in Granada, opposite the Alhambra, looking at the Alhambra from afar, filming my series, a group of young Spanish people were there, and they saw me filming, and they stopped me afterwards, and we started talking, and I asked them, what do you think of the character El Cid? I don't know if you know about El Cid.
Yeah, I saw the film. Yeah, Charlton Heston. Yeah.
Okay. So the way it's taught in Spain today is that he was a hero for the Reconquista. He fought to expel Muslims. And the lad said to me, he's about 19, 20, he goes, yeah, he's a hero for Spain. But to be honest with you, we were told a lie in history. It's not all true. Yeah. And I thought, okay, very good, very good. So there was lots of things in museums. They really do acknowledge in certain parts of the country the Muslim presence. So I was pleasantly surprised with what's happening there.
What about us, Asim? Do you encourage? I mean, for British Muslims, I mean, Al-Andalus is very close, isn't it? Andalusia is just a 3-hour flight, isn't it? Yep. Do you encourage us to visit? And generally speaking, do you encourage Muslims to get more in touch with their history?
I would definitely encourage people to visit. I mean, one place which is very easy is Gibraltar. It's actually a British overseas territory, isn't it? So there's daily flights going there, and it's very nice to stand on Tariq's mountain, Jabal Tariq, look at North Africa, and then look at the rest of Spain and imagine troops coming across and this conquest. Everyone speaks English, and it's like Britain with sun. So that's one place people should go to. But as for, and obviously the rest of it, the Mezquita of Cordoba and Alhambra, all beautiful places. And I think all Muslims, when they go there, they feel a sense of pride. So definitely that people should go. But as for learning history, if you don't know your history, you're not going to be able to plan your future effectively, because what we have today, the state of play in the world today, is all a result of history. We are where we are today because of the history we've gone through. So if you want to understand the world today and you want to plan your future, you've got to know your past.
That's a great note to end on, Asim. But finally, before I let you go, tell us about your YouTube channel. So if people just kind of put Tariq Trekker into the YouTube search engine, they'll find you, will they?
Yeah, they should find me. I started the channel maybe about 3 years ago, completely out of the blue. I'd planned to go to Central Asia because it was an area of the Muslim world which I knew nothing about. So before I go somewhere, I'd like to do a bit of reading. Yeah. So as I was doing my research, I thought to myself, why don't I make a video? So I jotted down in a few notes. And then when I got there to Tashkent, I just started talking into my phone. And it was a bit difficult for me because I'm someone who hated selfies, hated pictures. And I thought to myself, what the hell am I doing? But I thought, you know what, I've done the reading, I've planned it, just give it a go, see what happens. So I did a little series on Central Asia, uploaded it, and it went okay. I thought, you know what, this is not a bad thing, I might keep this going. And then had the idea to do the Andalus series. And I'm just halfway through uploading an Ottoman series, and it's something I'm really enjoying. I'm learning so much as I go along. And it's become a real passion of mine now. And the good thing is it helps other people, and the messages you get on Facebook or on YouTube really indicate that people are benefiting, enjoying, and want more. It's an ongoing project.
Yeah, I mean, we have a fantastic history, don't we, as Muslims? I mean, just even leaving aside the religion aspect, it's just full of wonderful stories, incredible stories. I mean, we were a superpower, weren't we, for, you know, over 1,000 years. So we got a lot of stories to tell. I mean, I don't think we need to defend everything that happened in our history, because bad stuff did happen as well as good stuff. But it's just fascinating. And obviously, we have so many lessons to learn from an Islamic point of view as well. So, yeah, long may it continue, Asim. And I must confess, I haven't watched your series, but I'm going to watch it. I'm a regular. I'm a regular visitor to Al-Andalus. I was there about just 2 months ago. I've been about 10, 12 times. Granada, Seville, Cordoba, Malaga. You know, even the other side of it, Almeria side, the Almeria coast. It's my favorite part of Europe, even for a holiday, leaving aside the Islamic stuff. But yeah. You are reminded, especially through the architecture, about you know, the glories of our past and inshallah our future as well.
Inshallah.
All right, Asim. I'm sure I'll be getting you on again, perhaps to talk about your Ottoman series or your Central Asia series. But for the moment, jazakallah khair for joining us today.
Barakallah feek. Thank you for having me on.
All right. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam.
So that was Asim Akil, otherwise known as the Tariq Trekker. Please check out his YouTube series on Muslim Spain, as I will be doing shortly, inshallah. And please, brothers and sisters, continue to follow Five Pillars, subscribe to all our platforms, tell your friends and family about us, follow us on Facebook, log on to our website, our Telegram platform, which we're trying to grow at the moment, Instagram, we're even on TikTok. And please do subscribe to our newsletter as well. We really are trying to kind of find ways to reach you directly instead of relying on these social media platforms that can just switch off the light, you know, from one moment to the next. And please, brothers and sisters, if you like what we do, if you appreciate what we do, please do find a way of donating to us, either by setting up a one-off donation or setting up rather a regular donation stream, whether that's £5, £10, £20 or more every month, so that we can keep our work going and keep making it better, inshallah. Okay, that's it for today. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.